Any ideas? Any thoughts? Carmel?
Why, when God went to strike Moses down, and his wife, it says, let's see, if the lodge had been pulled away, on a night met Moshe and would have killed him, had not the Lord taken a flintstone and cut off the foreskin of her son.
All right, we'll get to there. Any other comments?
It seems that when God is at work, things have to get worse before they.
I'm sorry, what?
Things have to get worse before they get better.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, also noticed that God didn't rebuke Moses for stating that they're not going to hear me. They're not going to hear me or Aaron. You're going to put words in our mouths to give to the people, but they're not going to hear me. And then the Father, just by giving him two signs, leaves a strong suggestion that he didn't just say, okay, Moses, no, I know what I'm doing. Just go tell the people what I put in your mouth, and that's all they need. He went ahead and gave them two signs that if they didn't hear you and Aaron's word, I'm going to give you something that will jolt the memory, that will allow them to believe that I am the one that sent you. And I think part of the gospel message throughout all the scriptures is that the Father not only gives the word, but he gives us his miraculous power, demonstration of the Spirit with power to accompany those words that jolts the minds of the stubborn.
Here, very close to it. Was Moses a brave man?
No.
Downright coward, wasn't he?
Yeah,
afraid, terrified. He ran for his life. He tried to do something in secret, and he got caught. And so he had to flee. Now, remember we talked last week about how many pharaohs had come and gone, come and gone, come and gone? Now, the pharaoh that wanted to kill Moses is dead, right? Now, that's the Pharaoh who was wanting to kill all the male boys. All right, remember the same guy. But he's dead now, and everybody that wanted to kill Moses is dead. None of them around. They don't exist anymore. Now, he's coming on to another Pharaoh. And this last Pharaoh, the fourth Pharaoh, now God comes down and says, I've heard the moaning and the groaning and the crying and the sighing of my people. Did he hear them in the first Pharaoh, second Pharaoh, third Pharaoh? Well, not really. He wasn't ready to deliver them yet for a reason. The last one was the worst one of the bunch. It's far worse than the other one that was trying to kill all the Jews. Remember we talked about that last week? It was done in a secret. It wasn't done. It was not an open thing. It was done in secret. Now, as we continue on, we're going to backtrack a little bit here. On chapter 3, because I do want to backtrack on a little bit on this one. Now, he made a statement, and it's a very interesting statement. We talked about this last week, but I think it's very important that we come through. And he says something about Moses asked him a strange question. What was the strange question that Moses asked him? All right, chapter 3. And he said, but what is your name? They won't hear what I have to say because they're wanting the name. And when the name is spoken, then they will know, won't they? Yeah. They would know. See, he only said Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob didn't know him by that name. Did not mean the rest of them learned what the name was or what the title was and what it meant. And that's why Moses had to do this. Now, remember, Moses dressed, when he showed up there at his father-in-law's place, did he look like an Israelite? He looked like an Egyptian. He wore Egyptian clothes. He wore Egyptian style. He was probably clean-shaven, like Egyptians would be, short hair, like Egyptians would be, and dressed in more elaborate and better-looking clothes than perhaps because he was part of Joseph's, not Joseph, not part of Pharaoh's family, but part of Pharaoh's daughter's family. Okay? So he asked him, what is your name? What did he say? Yitya, Asher, Yitya. Okay? And does mean, best way translated is, I am. Asher, I am. Asher can mean a lot of different things in Hebrew. It can mean, I am that I am who I am which I am because I am. So all that shares a lot of different meanings or interpretations which you could use that for. Four letters, remember? It comes from a verb. You know what that verb is? That verb is that which is coming. That which was, that which was, that which is, and that which is coming. This is the reason why we have that song. I don't know who wrote it. I haven't found out the author of it. But that messianic song they sing of Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. It's not a Jewish song, by the way. Jews didn't come up with it. The messianic people came up with that song. You will find it in the Jewish writings. And so here it says, the Yod, it has to be he. The reason why it's a he, because he can't turn around and say, I was, or I am, or I be, because Moses couldn't turn around and tell him, oh, it's I am. He had to tell him, he is. He is, because it's the word to be or to come. And it has, another vowel in it. Right offhand, I can't think of what it is, but I think it's another... Anyway. This word here is the same and come. Basically, it's two consonants once. And that past tense verb. He was. He comes. Basically, that's what it boiled down to. And this is the reason why you have in the book of Genesis, Revelation, brother, what does Messiah call himself? What does the creator of heaven call himself? Correct. So, that prayer tells us that it's not that he was past tense. Always was, always will be, and always will come. He's always going to be coming. He's always going to be present. He's always going to be in presence. So Yitah, Asher Yitah means that. And he says, Yitah, say Yitah sent you. Well, he couldn't say Yitah. He had to say Yah. Where is that? We don't have it up here, do we? Oh, she's got up here. It says Yah. That is that's a singular word meaning I am in a sense, or he is. He is to come, or he is one. The simple list of things about. So I want to talk to you, express that to you. But there's a one word here. Remember I said in Genesis, in the first chapter, about the word taskmasters? And what did I say that was? Princes of service. Those were Israelites. Now, when we get into the third chapter, I think it's... And third chapter, verse 7, in your translations, it says taskmasters again. It's a different Hebrew word. This one means one that is going to do bad things, brute and rulership and harm to you. He is the one who is going to be. So it's a different Hebrew word. So we're even telling you the difference between the two so we know what's going on. So now the word changes his definition. What's so bad about it, the very first part of the book, in most of your translations, they have taskmasters there in the very first sentence or very first chapter. And they wouldn't talk about the same people. They're talking about the leadership of Israel, the leaders of Israel. Now, with that in mind, we go on now to chapter 4. I want to ask you some more questions. In chapter 1, we found two women. Right? Why did they not execute? Oh, you mean these Israelites knew who God was? You mean they've always knew who God was? They always knew the creator of heaven and earth? Yeah, they did. They weren't a bunch of pagans. And what we have sometimes in our mind and our heart, because we have a belief system that God had us pull them out of paganology in order to bring them into the truth. This is now we have Moses saying, what's your name? If you tell me your name, then I know I go tell them that. And guess what? He told them the name. And then what would the Israelite leaders do? We'll get to there. What I'm trying to tell you is that there's not an awful lot of lies. An awful lot of lies. There are a lot of lies out there that the average Israelite was so pagan he didn't know what was right and wrong. I disagree. I don't see it there. Those women knew.
I'm just wondering if, on some level, Richard, they knew, they'd heard the name Yod-Heh Vav-Heh before. In Genesis 15:1. Genesis 15:7, it says, "And he said unto him," this is God speaking to Abraham, "I am Yod-Heh Vav-Heh that brought thee out of Ur of the Chaldees to give this land to thee to inherit it."
Right.
And then Abraham said, "Yahweh Elohim, where shall I know that I shall inherit it?"
Right. Now, that puts us a question, doesn't it? All right. Did Abraham know the phrase Yahweh? No, he didn't. He would know I am that I am. He would have heard Yahshua, Yah. He would not have turned that around. Now, what God told Abraham is, I am Shaddai. See, why would he call him? He wanted Abraham to pay attention that he is Shaddai. He used that word several times to identify himself because he wanted to tell Abraham. What do you want to tell Abraham? Why do you want Abraham to know? Okay, to protect. He will protect you. I am your shield. I am your banner. I'm the one that's going to provide and protect you. The first time we see this in Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we see God protection and protection and protection and getting rid of the ones. All right? Now we're at a different location. Now we're at a different point in time. You understand what I'm saying? I have no doubt in my mind that Abraham knew. But he would not have used those four names, those four letters, because that came later in history. This had to be past tense. I mean, you're talking to a third person. Okay, every time Abraham talked, he talked directly to him.
Is it then in the sense that now Yahweh is explaining his name in the fullest sense? One colloquial way of understanding that is, I will be there.
Howsoever,
will be there.
Yes.
So in other words, later on, the sin of Israel was when they start complaining about the leaks and about the water, they have forgotten really who he is. Because essentially, if he promises to be there, he's going to be there. Because it's past, present, and future, and they can never escape from him.
Yeah, and that's the point. That's the point. But you got it right. But they didn't believe that part. Because they didn't have evidence of that part. And we just read here, you see the last verse in the fourth chapter, in the fifth chapter, what did Moses say? You haven't even delivered them. All right. Oh, well, God talks next chapter. We'll hear about that next week. All right. So I'm looking at this thing and I'm saying, okay, now we come to the fourth chapter. Now, Moses answered and said, behold, they will not believe me, nor hear unto my voice, for they will say, Yahuwah has not appeared unto thee. And Yahuwah said unto them, what's in your hand? It's a rod. And what did God say? What happened to it? All right. Now, why did God, quote, turn a rod into a snake? Why couldn't you turn it into something else? Keep that in mind as we go through a very important part later on. He used a rod, turned it into a snake, and then turned the snake back into a rod.
Is it because the Egyptians could do that?
We'll see. We're not there yet.
Well, I don't know if this is the answer you want, but that's funny because very often people will say, the devil's out to get me. The devil's doing this and the devil's doing that. And it's like, ooh, maybe it's not the devil. Maybe it's thy rod and thy staff comfort me. Because if he used the devil to do it, he can do that. But he will move us back into line with discipline. And sometimes who is that discipline? Is it God? Or is it the devil? Or is it God's rod? Interesting.
Now,
narrative surely would be passed down at this point by word of mouth. I mean, I'm wondering also if there isn't some sort of recollection going on here of who is in charge. I mean, really, it was the serpent in the garden that was cast down on its belly and kicked out, right? Yes, Yahweh Elohim.
So yeah. Did it tell you that God has control, snake? Yeah, but telling you, God has control of the snake. All right? Total power. The snake cannot do what it wants to do. It cannot come and go where it wants to come and go. It is frozen in time. He cannot accomplish anything unless he lets go of its tail. Moses now is representing. You'll see Moses will now represent in time. Moses is going to be representative of the creator of heaven and earth, and Aaron's going to be representative of the high priest. We'll see that as a pattern we go through, especially when we go through Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. You'll see a pattern that's so obvious to you. So we have a picture where God is saying, I am in control. He's using a human being who is weak, feeble, terrified, ran from it, not to do anything except to show that God has control over the snake. Yes.
There's that scripture that Yeshua, he refers to himself as, I'm trying to remember, but, you know, where Moses lifted up the serpent.
We'll get there.
Okay.
When we get there. That's a different story altogether, but we will get there. All right. Now, that's proof number one. Right? Well, second proof was what? Instead of hand into it withered. Put back in again. It came out whole. Why? What was that supposed to prove to the Israelite leaders when Moses went down there and he had to throw the rod on the ground, turn it into a snake, pick up that snake, and turn it back into a rod? And why was it necessary for him to put his hand into his vest or his jacket, whatever he had on him, and then pull out, be withered, push back in, pull out, and now it's whole. What was the object there?
Yeah, in both instances, Yahweh was showing them that all power was given to Moses to exercise in this earthly arena. And while Moses was exercising first with the rod, he was now showing them also not only that you have exercised all power over the enemy, but also over the enemy when it comes to your health.
This is not the enemy he's talking about here. Be careful with you. Yes.
Leprosy was incurable. Only God could cure leprosy.
But the thing is, though, leprosy, sa'arat, it can be any form of skin disease. It can be eczema. It can be psoriasis.
So,
it can be mold.
So what does this tell you about the creator of heaven and earth? I can destroy and I can
re-heal.
Talking about the creator of heaven and earth, not about Moses. And these people needed to know that. See, he's going to show them that demonstration. Oh, he can kill me and destroy me down to nothing, and he heals me. He's told the power of God, not the power of Moses. And we'll get into this rod here later on. Yes.
It's more than just his hand. Your hand is what you do. If you get your hand into bad territory, into uncleanness, God can make the things you do, the things that you do are unclean. God can turn around and make the things that you did clean. Because that's why his hand. That's our work.
That's an idea we'll look at. Now the third proof was what? What was the third proof he had to do?
No.
The water turned into blood. Why did he have to take water out of the Nile and pour it on the ground? Why was it necessary for it to turn to blood? Why couldn't it be turned into Carol syrup? Why couldn't it turn into something nice and wonderful like wine? Why was it be blood for?
Because the life is in the blood, and he's showing that he has power over life.
Okay. Anybody else have any comment?
But even with Abraham, it was used as a sacrifice and remission of sin.
All right.
It could also be prophetic, because later on, Yeshua changes water to wine.
Right, I understand prophetic. We're not going there. We're talking about right now here with Moses. I don't want to go there. We're here in Exodus now. What was the Pharaoh before him doing? How? Throwing him in the river. The blood coming up was the blood of those Israelites who were spilt. Wow, what a witness. It tells the Israelites, God's going to give vengeance back. He's going to get even. He's going to take the life of it. He said there, right? I will kill your firstborn, Pharaoh. Oh, why? Because what you did. What'd you do? Throw in the river. Out comes the water. Blood. The blood of the Israelites. All right, does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Now, it may or may not be that in true life. I don't know. But I couldn't figure out why water turned into blood for. Unless there's death in the water. All right. Never thought about that before? It just helps you to think all these things that... And we go, I got it. One more point. I don't know if it's this here. Maybe it's later on. Okay, now let's go to verse 19 of the fourth chapter. And Yahuwah said unto Moses, go return to Egypt, for all the men are dead which sought thy life. 40 years now. After 40 years, they're all dead. That included everybody that wanted him dead. They're gone. They don't exist anymore. Another Pharaoh is now in control. And then, verse 20, Moses took his wife and his sons, plurality, and set them upon an ass. I'm reading this in Old English now. And returned to the land of, in order to return to the land of Egypt. And Moses took, what does it say in your translation? Did you see that? Oh, now when the rod turned into a snake and he picked up the snake and it turned into the rod, it wasn't the rod of Moses. It became the rod of Elohim. Wow. Now I told you, as we read all that Moses does, we're going to learn that he is acting and he said to Moses, you will do all the signs and all the wonders by this rod. Wow. So he's going to let the snake do an awful lot of damage, in a quote. But he's in total control. All right, let's go on. I just thought that was very interesting. Now, it's interesting here. Now, verse 21. Daniel tried to explain this before. He's got a good explanation for it. But I'm going to have to read what it says in Hebrew. And it says here, "And Yahuwah said unto Moses, When thou go to return to Egypt, see that thou do all these wonders before Pharaoh, which I have put in thy hand, the rod, and I will..." Okay. Wrong translation. Wrong word. The only place in all the Bible that's turned to hardness in the book of Exodus referring to Pharaoh or Pharaoh's men. What does that word really mean in Hebrew? Sorry, well, strong. He told that same word, he said to Joshua, "Be you hardened of heart?" No, "Be you strong and of courage." So it means he's going to strengthen Pharaoh's heart, give it more and more
resolve.
That's a good word. And so don't look at this thing as though God is went out of his way and made him hard, and it's not Pharaoh's fault, it is God's fault. Now the actions which you or I do, and God sees it and says, I'm going to do this instead on you. We ourselves in our own heart say, "I don't like that." And we harden our heart. We become like a heartless rock. We go against him. Human beings are naturally that way. When God comes down and does something that you don't like, what's your first reaction? Well, in Christianity, it says the devil did it, the devil did it, the devil did it, the devil did it. Wait a minute. Who's in control of the snake? You got to know the rod's there to poke you, to teach you. Is it supposed to be a nice, gentle one that just, you know, "Oh, hurt me, oh, hurt me"? Or is it like being hit with a 2x4?
Yes.
Yeah, it boils down to it, because God doesn't deal with us softly. When we are in a state of refusing to hear what he has to say. Mary.
Ellen had a good conversation about this the other day. Just thinking about how we've been sick a lot and where does the sickness come from. And, you know, just the mentality that we've had about it does, you know, we were getting attacked and stuff like that. But I know that Yeshua says, that this, the woman that comes up to him with the issue of blood,
yes,
he says, this woman who has been bound for 18 years, that the devil has bound her for 18 years. So
right. It
does sound like, you know, there can be a part that he plays in us being sick.
But he cannot cause something unless the creator of heaven and earth has control of his tail. I'll tell you what, once he lets go of that tail, then he tells the snake where to go. Now, we're not in the New Testament on that one here. That's a very important lesson that which most people have to learn and understand why that took place. But we're not there yet, because I'm here. All right? But you got a point, and I'd like to be able to cover that, but I'm not going to do that today. All right, yes?
I just wanted to say to Mary, it doesn't necessarily mean that Satan has specifically just bound that woman. With the fall, that's when sin and death entered the world and disease. So, presumably, Satan, in a sense, has, whenever we get sick, it's a binding by Satan, I think, in a way, not necessarily just aimed at me, but just at the sheer nature of the fallen world that we live in. And yes, he had held her bound for 18 years by virtue of the fact she'd been bleeding for that length of time, not necessarily because he's just got her bound. Do you see what I'm saying? It's the natural outworking of the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, keep one thing in mind. Okay. Eve was deceived. Adam transgressed.
Yes.
A woman who is in this bondage for 18 years is deceived. What did she do? Spent money and money and money on doctors, 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 doctors. Well, that is a deception. Because real healing does not come from the doctors. It comes from the creator of heaven and earth. So in a nutshell, when you look at this thing, you're saying, what was the problem? The problem was the woman was desperate. Quote, desperate? Yes, she was. Downright desperate. All things didn't happen. She was believing that all the doctors, what's that Greek word for it? Pharmaceutical, would heal her. How many, quote, women do you know believe that doctors will heal you if you go there often enough? They're in the hundreds. Most men don't bother going unless they have to. Not because they're deceived. They just don't do it. They do die than that, but not really. But you understand what I'm saying? So it is a point of deception, and when she touched that garment, deception disappeared. All right. Now, we have to go into something that's very unclear, or seems to be unclear. In Exodus 4, verse 22, it's telling to Moses, "And thou shalt say to Pharaoh, thus says Yahuwah, Israel, my son, my firstborn." Now, what do you think about that? Also says Ephraim is his firstborn. How many firstborns does he have? What does it mean by firstborn? Firstborn of what? Not of the womb. There's no womb there.
Also says Yeshua was firstborn. He's the firstborn.
I'm only sticking here right now what it says here in the Tanakh. Yes.
The name Reuben means my strength.
Correct.
And he's the firstborn.
All right.
Power.
So, what does it mean that Ephraim is the firstborn? And what does it mean that Israel is his firstborn? Which one is it?
Israel was his firstborn as far as the father of the 12 tribes. And Ephraim was the first, I think his mother was Gentile.
Okay. What does the name Israel mean?
Prince with God, one who has prevailed.
One that rules with God, one that rules as God. Powerful, isn't it? That's what that Hebrew word for Israel means. Everybody else has a interpretation. They have a belief system. And because they don't recognize the name, they don't recognize what it's all about. And that's a handicap. Now, here the whole nation of Israel winds up being his firstborn. Israel is the firstborn of all the Gentile nations, of all nations around the world. He and Israel is the only nation that God is working with, dealing with, even today. Yes.
They become his firstborn at Mount Sinai when they say, "We will."
He said, "These are my firstborn." He said to tell Pharaoh, "This is my firstborn." So it was not then. It was before then. Now, how can that be?
Past, present, and future.
Yeah, it's all in his plan. He had this thing set out, and that's what he set it in motion to do so. We don't think that way because, see, we think of what comes from the womb. He's not talking about what comes from the womb. He's talking about what I'm going to deal with here now is the nation of Israel. Those that will rule with God or rule as God. How many of you know from Scripture what country on the face of this earth, according to the prophecy, will, quote, rule the world as God rules the world? Israel. All right. So, guess what? We're under the rulership of Israel. Now, what about Ephraim? Why is he called the firstborn?
Birthright. So what?
Blessing. Well, they're blessings. The blessings were passed on to him. He's the first one that got the blessings. Although Joseph did it, he actually was not alone. He didn't get it by himself. It was passed on to the great blessings of this world, was given unto Ephraim. So that's the first one that got the great blessings. Now, did they handle it very well? No. Does the nation of Israel, the past, present, handle being ruling with God? No. But it's a prophecy. Like I said, it's a prophecy of what's happening. What's going to happen? Those names are important to us. They weren't accidentally thought up on the top of their heads. and rattle them off. Though it does seem like that, but Joseph had a reason. All right, now, the funny thing about this, after he said this, he said something else. I say to thee, let my son go, that he may serve me, and thou refuse to let him go. Behold, I will slay thy son, thy firstborn. Now the next chapter re-throws a curve. I'll read it in Old English. Pick up they put a word in there. They put the name Moses in there because that's what they wanted to put in there. But that's not what it says. All right. And he says now, I say unto you, and it came to pass, brother, by the way, verse 34, in the end, Old English means encampment, and he read it correctly, that Yahuwah met him and sought to kill him. Who was Yahuwah to meet with? He was to meet with Moses. And it came to pass on the way, another translation here, that Jehovah makes him and seeks to put him to death. Why would he do this? What was the purpose behind it all? Do you have any idea?
You know, this has been a very contentious passage for a long, long time with both Jews and Christians. But basically, there was one argument that says, based on two statements that Moses makes later in chapter 6, and in chapter 6, Moses says twice to the Lord, I am a man of uncircumcised lips. And that so the discussion goes that Moses at this point was not circumcised. And Zipporah, and he's going to be leading Israel. And Zipporah then takes the foreskin off her son, Moses' son, and touches the genitals of Moses and says, you are a bridegroom of blood to me. And that it is a substitutionary circumcision, which is then echoed in Paul's teaching in the New Testament, where in Messiah, we are the circumcised. So it's a kind of, that's how the argument goes from the two different camps. Of course, the Jewish camp doesn't pick up Paul's teaching.
I understand what you're saying, but I will move away from that for a moment. Okay? And the reason why I want to move away from that moment, because everybody's got an idea what it is. I grant you. Well, ideas are great. Yes?
I have a question, because here it only talks about her circumcising one son, but he left with two sons.
Okay, we're getting there. She's asking the question. See, oh, why just one? All right, now we have to ask ourselves some questions. What on earth is going on? What? It was Moses' life that was at stake, not the life of his son. Life of Moses. Now, I disagree with you on one point. Because since he was raised up by, he was 3 months old by the time he was given to the God, he would already been circumcised.
But Pharaoh would have stopped circumcision. It's the first.
Oh, don't say that.
I know, but we have to realize the first thing when, it doesn't matter whether it was Antiochus, Hitler, or whoever it is, the first thing they do is
I want to back up here, because what problem is, he wasn't circumcised. Moses wasn't the one that had to cut it off. It was the son. Why the son? What did she say? Why did she say what she said?
Well, the son's name is interesting. It's Gershom. He's called Gershom.
Two of them.
Yes, but presumably Gershom would be the eldest one.
He'd be the oldest
which
one.
Which is very interesting because
what's
that
the name
is
of the
word
one?
For Ger.
What's the name of the second
which
one?
Which is a stranger, which is the non-Jewish.
What's the name of the second
Jewish.
Son?
It's gone out of my head.
Eleazar,
yeah.
All right, now. So we ask ourselves some questions. Whether it was Gershom or Eleazar, were they grown men or 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 5-year-old? They were grown men.
Yeah.
He married her when he was 40. Now, she produced two kids for him real quick. Now, that's right there, and they lived for a long, long, long time. And now he's 80. Okay? The kids are up there in years. Okay? Very few men have the guts to do it themselves. Yes.
Well, one thing, though, is that this wasn't Zipporah's job, really, to do this. Any woman, I can't imagine any woman wanting to circumcise her son, whether he's 8 days old or 80 years old. I can't imagine any mother wanting to do it. But she felt that she had to do it, and she did it. And she probably wasn't very happy about the fact that she had to do it, because that was Moses' job. It was his duty to circumcise those sons and make sure
all
it happened.
Right, okay, now back up. Wait. What is she just going to say?
Yeah, but why weren't they done as babies?
Okay, this is why Moses did not obey the commandment. And if you don't obey the commandment, something's going to happen to you. He cannot go down to Egypt and tell them to obey God when he himself didn't. Only one son wasn't circumcised. The other apparently was. And I think it's Eleazar that was not circumcised, the younger one. And his name means God is what? God is my help. All right? God is my help. God helps me. All right? Now, this is only my thinking. No one knows if it was one or the other. But what Moses, responsibility was upon the man. Now, why did she circumcise both? Because he took both his sons down. Why did she circumcise one and not the other? Because the other one didn't do his job. Now, this is my personal opinion. Moses wasn't doing what he was supposed to do. Now, you think God can be angry with a man who is righteous? Yeah. What did he do? I mowed the snake out. And if you don't carry out this function, I'm going to take your life, Moses. You can't get away with it, Moses. Moses should have done his job. But he didn't. That's why his life was at risk, not his son. Okay, I know the Jewish thinking, and I understand that, but I don't want to put the reason why I can't accept that because it's an abstract thing brought into something that's written here. I am very strong on that.
But so is your hypothesis also of Eleazar.
Yes, it is a hypothesis.
However, it's quite common for Jews not to circumcise their kids. For example, Joshua, when they came out, there was a lot of men and grown men who had to be circumcised.
Oh, wait. That was commanded by God not circumcised. We'll get there in book Joshua, Daniel read on. He told them not to do it for 40 years.
But historically, it is true that Jews don't always circumcise their kids.
Living in Egypt, there was probably
a lot of them that weren't circumcised.
I question that. The reason why I question that is because Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and all the sons, one of their brothers, their sons, their great-grandsons, great-grandfathers would have done, all the elders of Israel that died in the first generation, the second generation, would have had that procedure going through. I'm not going to assume, because it doesn't tell me, Susan, it doesn't tell me all of Israel wasn't doing that. It just said Moses. So I'm aiming at the leader. God looks at the leader. He looks at the person who's going to send down there, and he says, you've got to live up to the standards, and if you don't do it, your life is at risk. Okay, I about read quiz. Yes?
I don't understand why he waits. Like, he sets up Moses to do this whole thing. The whole chapter is telling him, giving him directives and telling him what to do. And then, out of the blue, he's coming to kill him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, if it was a problem that he hadn't done this, why wasn't that addressed in some way? Or there's no, you know, it's not like he told him to do it and he disobeyed.
Okay, but personal opinion doesn't make a difference to me. Every time God challenges somebody to do something, they go along. Every in your life, my life, everybody's life. God tells you to do something. You start walking that direction. You start walking. You believe in it. You start doing it. And all of a sudden, you go on. You're happy. Okay. And all of a sudden, 3 years later, 10 years later, all of a sudden, God says, by the way, did you know I said this too? How come you're not doing it? And then a curse will come upon you if you say, well, yeah, but God understands. Oh, yeah, he understands it, right? He understands. He's going to put a curse upon you because you didn't carry out the Torah.
Well, just the fact that she only did it to one son, then that leaves at least the possibility that the other one was done. Also, the very fact that God, I mean, right here, God doesn't say anything. He just comes to kill him. And Zipporah knows immediately what will stop God from killing him. So they had to know something.
Zipporah saved Moses' life. She acted to save his life. She shouldn't have had to do that. You know what her name means? You know what her name means? A little bird. A little bird. A little bird that hops.
I was going to say, you said he couldn't go down there to tell his brethren something unless he kind of, you know, has it. Then why didn't he get circumcised? Why just his son? That doesn't make sense.
I'm sorry, what?
You said he had to himself, in a sense, practice what he preaches before he was sent.
What was the command?
And why wasn't he circumcised then?
He doesn't tell us that he was or was not.
Oh.
It tells us that he didn't do something he's supposed to do. It's a Jewish belief concept. Okay? That's what I'm saying. It's an abstract over here to justify that. I don't see it in written in Hebrew. It's not there in Hebrew. And I'm very strong on written what it says there in Hebrew. And Moses didn't do something. It was his life at stake. If he had to be circumcised, he would have had to be circumcised, and maybe she should have circumcised him. But he didn't. Just one son.
But Moses does say, quite literally, if we're going to just take the literal word, in chapter 6,
right.
He does say, I am a man of uncircumcised
lips. So did a prophet. One of the major prophets, I am a circumcised.
I know, but
my
this
mouth
is the first instance of it. I mean, there is a possibility.
Right.
You can't deny it. There is a possibility that he wasn't circumcised.
Quote, I'll put it this way. I won't accept it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
You can accept it. I cannot accept it. That's my personal opinion. I've got to get finished chapter 5.
I think in a lot of ways, when we see something happening to an innocent person, that lesson affects us a lot more than if something is done to us or something is done to a guilty person. Like when we hear these sad stories about some innocent person getting like lung cancer or something, when they didn't drink, they didn't smoke, they didn't do all those typical things we think of you should do to get lung cancer, we feel a lot more sympathy for them and we learn something from a lot more from that person's situation than the 4-pack-a-day smoker who gets lung cancer.
Yeah.
So something to be said, with whether Moses is circumcised or not, it doesn't tell us. But it tells us that at least one of those sons was uncircumcised. And I think because of that, that whatever lesson God had for Moses there, he learned it a lot better than if it had been done on him. If Zipporah had circumcised Moses,
he had to fear God with all of his might. Okay, I got to get a chapter. We're getting late.
Can I say one? If you read this, though, the Lord met Moses at the end. Zipporah knew what to do, so did they have a discussion? He knew he was supposed to do it and just had not
My
obeyed.
My personal opinion, yes. He didn't follow through with his know he's supposed to do on one of his sons, but not the other one. And I don't know which one. It doesn't matter which one, but that son wasn't a little boy. He was a grown man. Okay, Exodus chapter 5, verse 1. Got to get past this there now. Now, after Moses and Aaron, they went on down. They told Pharaoh something. And thus, this is Yahweh said, Yahweh Elohim of Israel, let my people go that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness. What do you think of when you hear the word wilderness?
Desolation. Trial. Testing.
Okay, learn Hebrew. Learn Hebrew. Learn Hebrew. It's not a desert. It's a word that's used for pasture, for an uninhabited land outside of the city. It's a land where you take your goats to, your sheep to, and have them have something to eat. People don't live there. Why? Because that's for the animals to have something to eat. simplicity of it. When you look at this thing, wilderness, over and over again in Hebrew, it's talking about a place like a pasture, a place where animals get to eat. And around the cities, there were areas around every city in the old days, not today, that were pasture lands. But for one thing only. You don't build houses out there. You don't build homes out there. Now, when it comes, it can mean a desert, but the most 99% of the time, the Bible has nothing to do with the desert. It has to do with don't inhabit that area because it's not for you to live there. Don't build homes. Don't build a tent. Don't build there. Those are for other things. If you, we will get there. But you understand that word, that it does not mean, in a sense, it means of that which is driving. You're driving the cattle or the sheep or the ox. You're driving them somewhere. Where are you driving them to? For them to get something to eat. It's the simplicity of the word in Hebrew. Very simple word. Now, when God put them, brought all Israel out into the wilderness, we'll get there when we get there. We're going to see he brought them to a place for them to eat. And he wasn't bringing them to bring them to a place where they get to munch on grass. They had to begin to consume the word of the living God on Mount Sinai. It's a whole parallel. Now, verse 3, it says here, and he said, let's go out for 3 days' journey. Now, it doesn't tell us when that timing was going to take place. He just wanted, we need to have 3 days' journey going out. That wasn't immediately. It doesn't say it's immediately. What we see as we go on farther into it, has to do with the Passover season. It has to do with days of unleavened bread. And he says that, well, and he says here, now, least Elohim fall upon us with a pestilence or with a sword. What's a sword? We know what that is, right? Real sharp thing. Got your pieces. It's an interesting word. Very fascinating word. We think of it as a military weapon. When you think of the word of God as like a sword, what's it going to do to you? It's going to hurt, you know. It's a cutting instrument, that's true. But it's a place in which you have a drought. A drought.
This is the wilderness?
A drought.
Drought.
No rain.
All right. Sword.
Sword. It can mean drought. Having no water. It comes another verb. To be waste, to be made lay waste, to be made desolate, to make, and to bring to ruin. That's what that word sword means. So it's not what we think of a military weapon, although it's a physical weapon, isn't it? It's a physical thing that's sharp. It's a physical thing that can cut you to pieces. Right? Can the Word of God do the very same thing without having a weapon in his hand? And how does it cut you down? It'll cut you where it hurts. Food, clothing, and shelter. That's going to hurt. You're going to physically feel pain. So it's a fascinating thing. And he gave them a warning. And now the other one, it says, and their officers, and they spoke to the people. What's very funny about the officers here is the Jewish leaders of that were made officers by the taskmasters, not the chiefs, but the taskmasters, which is a negative terminology in Hebrew, meaning the one that has rule over and can do structure with you. Okay, and they ask these questions. You know, the officers of the children of Israel came and to Pharaoh and saying, well, why do you deal this way with us? Well, what happened to them previously? Who's being beaten? And the officers of the children of Israel, which Pharaoh and taskmasters had set over them, were beaten. Now, Sesame DeMille says, every Israelite was beaten. No. It just tells you who got beaten. That's who God listens to. He listens to the leadership. Why does he listen to leadership? Because he knows we will respond to someone who is in leadership. We don't listen or respond to people who are not. We want to know what the truth is. You have to go through them. And of course, Moses said, and Moses returned unto Jehovah and said, Lord, where have thou done ill with us? Why is it that you have sent me? For since I came, Pharaoh, to speak in thy name, he hath dealt ill with this people. Neither hast thou delivered thy people at all. What do you think was going through Moses' mind? Was he a brave man here? No. He was blaming. Why did you send me here? That's a really hard lesson, isn't it? How would like one of you think about this? You're supposed to go deliver the people you love and you adore. They're part of your world. And when you go and you tell them what you're going to do, they're happy about it. Okay, go. And so you go to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh turns around, and or the guy in charge turns around and treats the people you love and cherish abundantly in a worst-case scenario. They treated them worse than you. Ever imagine? You know, you start taking yourself as a human being. We know the end of Moses' life was very, very brave and bold and courageous. Do you think he had to go through some really, really hard, difficult trials? More so than any of us in this room will ever. We'll never reach that point. This is the reason why we must listen to Moses first. Then we get to hear and understand what it says, the song of Moses first, and then the song of the Lamb second. If you understand Moses first, listen to Moses first, you'll understand the complete tune that the Messiah is singing. They are in complete harmony with one another. Got to call it quits.
I just wanted to make an observation, Richard. It seems to me that what happens to Israel later in determining if God's name really was what it said it was happens first to Moses. Right? Because by that time, Moses knows who God is. He knows that God's going to come through. But initially, he was just like Israel saying, why have you picked me? You know, you're not delivering
it. No, God gives the answer in the sixth chapter. Yes. And it's going to happen, but it's not going to happen, Moses, the way you think is going to be happening. Don't, in a sense, I'm telling you, Moses, don't lead unto your own understanding how I'm going to do it. Okay? He's just like you and me. We wanted to get the job done. He should do it this way. I think God's going to do it this way. I think God wants to do it this way. And lo and behold, he doesn't. He has something else in mind. Far greater. If he just delivered them out of there, then the snake is free. No, he's going to beat the snake up.